Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Rates and Lanes with Rico Mohammed. This is the show where we improve your knowledge of the freight market, improve your bottom line, and improve the transportation industry as a whole. We're talking Rates and Lanes. Let's move on down the audio road.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Rates and Lanes podcast. I am your host, Rico Mohammed. And boy, I tell you, coming around the corner on two wheels, trying to get in here to make sure we can bring the podcast to you guys tonight. So I definitely appreciate everyone for tuning in tonight. Tonight, we are going to switch up gears just a little bit. Of course, we're going to cover some Rates and Lanes. I'm going to cover the Bad Broker Report, some information from the USDA, and also we're going to cover the DAT trend lines. But we are going to be joined tonight by special guest, a member of the Less Truck team, Mr. Dale Howard. And we're going to talk about compliance because we got the ELD mandate breathing right down our neck. And so if you got questions pertaining to, if you haven't got something in place yet, or if you got questions on how to conduct yourself on any, if you may get stopped for an inspection or so on and so forth, we got some resources for you guys tonight for you to be able to call in, ask questions. That's what it's definitely, that's what we're here for. So we want to bring that information and make that available for you. So we're going to have Mr. Dale Howard joining us here in just a little bit. With that being said, and without any further ado, let's see if we can get over here and get into what we normally do, and that is Rates and Lanes. Let's talk about what we're seeing right now coming out of the USDA off the fruit and vegetable report that came out a little bit earlier today. We got a little bit of movement on this report, which is always good news when we got some movement, especially in the shortage and slight shortage direction. And there is a lot of movement on this current report that came out. So without any further ado, I'm going to list off all of the areas that have a shortage of trucks, a shortage of supply of trucks in those areas, which spells opportunities for people with dry vans, reefers, and flatbeds. Or if you got Conestogas, we can load. It depends on the produce. They can load certain different things on different truck modes, but depending on the produce, and you should be able to know what that is by your mode of operation. But those areas where the shortages are being reported, San Luis Valley, Colorado, Idaho, Merle County, Oregon, Upper Valley, Twin Falls, Burley District, Idaho, Nebraska, Columbia Basin out of Washington, Yakima Valley, and Winchy District, Washington. Those areas are all reporting a shortage of trucks. There's a low supply of trucks in those areas, so that spells opportunities. The next areas that we're going to list off are areas where they are reporting slight shortages. Once again, opportunities abound, especially if you're working that spot market. Those areas that we're going to list off here for slight shortages is central and western Arizona, Mexico crossing through Nogales, Arizona, Kern District, California, Oxnard District, California, Santa Maria, California, Mexico crossing through Texas, and central Wisconsin. All of those areas are areas that are reporting a slight shortage of supply of trucks in those areas. And we have one area that you being reported that there is a surplus of trucks in that area, meaning that there's way more trucks than there is supply of freight. And that area, without any surprise, is central and South Florida. So, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, you got some things to maybe plot out on some of your future trips. We're going to try to get a copy of this posted enough on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page. Give me a brief second, and I will try to get that up and on board. But without any further ado, we're going to jump over into the next segment, and we're going to jump into this week's DAT trend lines. And we have some movement on the trend lines as well. Van rates, which rose prior to Thanksgiving, just keep giving more higher rates. Last week, the national average van rate increased 1 cent to $2.10 per mile, a 3-year high. Flatbed rates also increased 1 cent to $2.31 per mile. For reefers, we may be experiencing a lull between Thanksgiving and Christmas as rates decline by 3 cents from their record high the week before. So let's jump into the meat and potatoes of the report, and let's look at the van demand and capacity portion of the report for the week of December the 3rd through the 9th. Van load postings declined 14%, and truck postings increased 12% last week. That caused the load-to-truck ratio to fall 23% from 9.3 loads per truck to a that 9.3 loads per truck, that is a multi-year high level of trucks, of loads per truck that has been recorded since DAT has been recording the load-to-truck ratios. The national average van rate added 1 cent. Taking a look back historically, van load post increased by 11 cents in November compared to October. The truck post fell 7%. As a result, the November load to truck ratio increased 19% to 6.9 van loads per truck, the highest monthly average in years. November ratio was 124% higher than it was in November of 2016. Also, we talk about race and lanes, but fuel prices are also declining by 0.3 percentage points. National average price of diesel is sitting at $2.92 per gallon. Let's jump into the report and look and see how the rates were performing for dry vans over the previous week of December 3rd through the 9th. And as soon as our technology catches up with us, here we go. The national average van rate moved higher for the third week in a row, increasing 1 cent to $2.10 per mile, the highest van rate in 3 years. Regional markets experienced price increases included in the Los Angeles, Memphis, and Buffalo markets. Looking back historically over the rates, the national average van rate for November increased 5 cents to $2.07 per mile compared to October. That's the highest monthly average in more than 3 years. The rate was 40 cents higher than the average in November of 2016. So working on the spot market, there are some opportunities that are abound if you are negotiating hard and heavy as you should be. Taking a look around the country, starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we have Philadelphia, Pennsylvania checking in, showing average spot market rates for dry vans at $1.99 per mile. Moving down into the southeastern portion of the United States, Atlanta, Georgia checks in, showing an average outbound rate on the spot market of $2.28 per mile. Moving up into the Midwest, Chicago, Illinois checks in, showing average spot market rates of $2.70 per mile. Moving into the south central portion of the United States, Dallas, Texas checking in, showing an outbound rate of $1.80 per mile. These are averages, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, on these outbound rates that we're giving out. And wrapping up the report, coming out of the West Coast, Los Angeles, California, showing an average outbound rate for dry vans at $2.74 per mile. Moving right along, jumping over into the flatbed report, if we can get the technology to cooperate. And here we go. All right. Flatbed demand and capacity report for December 3rd through the 9th. Last week's flatbed load post increased 1% and truck post increased by 11%. That caused the load-to-truck ratio to decline by 9% to 27.9 loads per truck. The national average rate for flatbeds moved higher last week. taking a look back historically compared to October, flatbed load posts were down 29% in November, while truck posts declined by 3%. That resulted in a 27% decline in the load-to-truck ratio compared to the previous month at 29 loads per truck. The ratio was 94% higher than it was in November of 2016. All positive things moving in the right direction. Let's check and see how rates were performing for flatbeds during the December 3rd through December 9th. And starting out, prices for flatbeds remained high for this time of year. Last week, the national average flatbed rate increased 1 cent to $2.31 per mile. That's just 3 cents lower than the peak in October, when relief supplies were rushed to the southeast following Hurricane Irma. The flatbed load-to-truck ratio moved lower last week. Let's take a look back historically. The national average flatbed rate in November dipped 3 cents to $2.33 per mile, compared to October's record high flatbed rates of 40 cents higher than they were in November of 2016. Moving right along, jumping over into the reefer segment of the DAT report. Technology's moving real slow for me tonight. Here we go. After holding steady at 3-year high for the two previous weeks, the national average reefer rate dipped 3 cents last week, down to $2.40 per mile. Some freight markets experienced outbound prices increase, including Atlanta, Twin Falls, Idaho, and McAllen, Texas, kind of reflecting what we just talked about on the USDA report as well. The reefer load-to-truck ratio also fell from its multi-year high. Historically, in November, the national average reefer rate was $2.43 per mile, which was 11 cents higher than October's average, and then the highest monthly average since June of 2014. Compared to November of 2016, the reefer rate was 47 cents higher this go-around. So like I said, all positive information there. Taking a look around the country for reefers, we have, coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, Elizabeth, New Jersey checks in showing an average spot market rate of $2.04 per mile. Coming out of Lakeland, Florida, we're moving at $1.41 per mile on average. On average on the spot market coming out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, good googly goo, $3.61 per mile on average coming out of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Moving down to the south central portion of the United States, McAllen, Texas checks in showing an average spot market rate of $2.10 per mile. And coming out of the west coast, Fresno, California, showing a very strong $2.41 per mile coming out of the west coast. And that, ladies and gentlemen, will wrap up this week's DAT Trend Lines report. We're going to go back and go and jump into the bad broker report. Thank goodness that we do not have a laundry list from last week. We only picked up two new additions to the report this week, which is encouraging from the previous times that we've had read this report off to you. The first company to make the list this week is Bosnick Logistics, LLC. It's an older company, too. This is kind of a shame. MC number is 037489. FMCSA shows that their surety bond has been canceled. They show almost $90,000 in non-payment complaints have been reported. And the next company that made the list is Baraka Logistics, Inc., another older company. The MC number is 043819. FMCSA shows trust fund is scheduled to cancel on 12/16/17. Over $19,000 in non compliant, non-payment complaints have been reported. So make sure that we are staying on top of our vetting. I had to do a little bit of paperwork today myself. Going back, I had one of my person that I did some spot market work for, unfortunately, I had one of them show come up, pop up in my list. I had to make some phone calls today and get on top of that to find out when the check was going to be cut, because we're running about 45, pushing 50 days for a payment. So make sure that you're staying on top of that. Make sure you got a good accounting system in place, something that gives you some type of warning so that you can stay on top of that stuff and don't let that get too far out of whack. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to go to the phone lines and welcome our good friend, a member of the Less Truck team, Mr. Dale Howard, up and on board with us. Dale, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, great, Rico. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
I appreciate it anytime we can get together. And for those of you that don't know, just want to let you guys know, Dale, won't you give the people a brief little history about yourself so that, you know, they can have a little understanding on what it is that you're bringing to the table for us tonight?
Sure. I retired out of a 23-year law enforcement career. I'm too honest to steal and too lazy for a paper route, so I'm back trucking. My last 7 years of my career were spent in commercial vehicle enforcement. I was a CBSA instructor for our department. Have conducted thousands of roadside inspections and taught hundreds of officers how to perform an inspection. Collision investigator for commercial vehicle accidents, and been driving tractor trailer for 37 years now. So I'm one of the dinosaurs. I drove off and on, you know, part time while I was on the job, owned my own trucks, and back now being a company driver and in the semi-retirement mode pulling a reefer.
Cool beans. Well, that should let everyone know that Dale is definitely qualified to answer any of your questions that you may have tonight about compliance issues. But one thing in particular that we wanted to bring up and we wanted to broach the subject on, and that's pending ELD mandate that's coming right down the pike this week. Next week rather. And Dale, what do you think? What are some things that If some of our listeners don't already have something in place for their company or whatever, what are some of the things that they may need to be concerned about?
They need to pull over right now and get on the internet and order an ELD. We've known for 2 years this date is coming, and the FMCSA and their guidance on enforcement has made it very clear that, you know what, you've known this date for 2 years, and come Monday morning at 12:01, anybody that is required to have an ELD that doesn't have one is fair game for enforcement. I'll clear up some myths. The latest rumor floating around is, well, if I have an order form, I can just show it to the officer and he'll cut me some slack. I wouldn't hang your hat on that. Would strictly be up to that officer. It's not FMCSA policy. Again, they were very clear that this date was announced 2 years ago, and here we are. Another one that some groups are floating around is, well, you know, we've got 90 days because, you know, they're soft enforcement until April the 1st till we go out of service. And I'll shoot that myth down. The only reason you're not being placed out of service right now is CVSA, the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, and that's the organization that all these law enforcement agencies belong to that set the out-of-service criteria and set the standard for roadside inspections. That out-of-service criteria goes into effect April the 1st every year. So the only reason you're not being placed out of service until April 1 is the new out-of-service guide doesn't kick in until April the 1st. So if you get stopped you have a real good chance of having a citation issued, and the numbers are all over the board. Washington State is up to, I've heard, $1,500. I think Idaho is up to $500. Montana seems to be floating around that $500 mark. And yes, the FMCSA won't assess the carrier points on their CSA score, but as a driver, you will accrue the points on your PSP score. So it's, you know, there was a lot of bad information floating around and a lot of groups saying, well, yeah, it's not really going to happen. And, you know, we've got senators in our pocket and, yeah, we're going to get a 2-year extension. And, yeah, that's the clock is winding down, and you got 5 days left to get into compliance.
Let me jump in for a second and ask you this question, Dale. I know that a lot of people, what about for the older trucks? They were saying that there was some stuff out there about an older truck, depending on what year the truck was, would have to comply with the mandate. What can you tell us about that?
If the engine is 1999 or older, then you don't have to comply with the mandate. But you will have to convince the officer on the side of the highway that your 2014 or 2018 glider kit has got a 1999 engine in it. So somewhere, if you're in that boat, make sure that you know where the VIN plate is that shows the manufactured date of that engine, that you can pop the hood and convince the officer that you're running an exempt truck. There's a 90-day exemption for agricultural livestock haulers that are hauling animals, livestock, pigs, cattle, sheep, horses, goats, bees. They've been granted a 90-day exemption until they try and sort some of this out. The rumor mill at CBSA is they know the 14-hour clock is a problem. And rumor has it that, you know, now that we're going to have some hard data and everything runs on numbers, you know, they're going to be in a better position to open Pandora's box and fix the 14-hour clock. But in the meantime, you know, everybody's argument that, you know, ELDs aren't flexible. Well, neither were the hours of service. A paper log wasn't flexible either. You know, we either lied, cheated, or committed fraud when we signed up that said it was true and accurate. So the hours of service regulation has not changed. It's just how we record it. And I think one of the other great unintended consequences of this will be is right now there's zero incentive for a shipper or receiver to change how they do business, because they understand that you'll go back out to your truck and you'll rewrite history and you'll deliver the load on time regardless how long you've sat there for free. So that changes in 5 days. So I think, you know, for the negatives, and trust me, I am somebody way smarter than me dreamed this up, and I'm not for or against. It's just this is the hand we've been dealt, so these are the cards we got to play, and we just have to make the most of them. And I've been on electronic log for 7 months now, and I haul produce, pull a reefer, multiple picks, sometimes multiple drops. And all we have to do, and I know people hate to hear this, but it's planning. And the sun will come up December the 19th, and the earth won't fall off its axis. And it's going to be business as usual. And for those of us who have our acts together, I think, you know, the rates are showing, you know, such tremendous strength right now. There's going to be a lot of money to be made. And you just need to be poised to take advantage of that.
Uh-oh. Are you there, Dale?
There we are.
Okay. Yeah, you was breaking up a little bit. I just wanted to make sure that we kept you in there.
Ladies,
with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, if you got questions, I see we got a bunch of people on the line. If you got some questions, if you got some things that you've been hearing, if you would like to get some things cleared up, you can press number one. That puts you in the call queue for us to be able to come to you and get you up and on board with us so you can ask Dale your questions. Excellent opportunity to take advantage of that. While we're at it, Dale, you were talking about some of your history as an officer. What are some just some simple things that and some pointers, because we got new listeners that may be listening in, some simple things that people could do to be proactive about handling a roadside inspection or even a full level one inspection inside of a scale house. What are some things that some people could probably do to maybe make that experience go a little bit smoother?
Well, and for anybody that sat through any one of my presentations at the CMC, do not look like a wounded gazelle. Because if you look like a wounded gazelle when you're going down the road, somebody in law enforcement is going to come by and eat you. So just, you know, you don't have to be driving a show truck. Just pay attention to the little things and do a pre-trip. Just do something. You know, pretend that you care. Do a pre-trip. Stay on top of things and don't make yourself a target. And if you are selected, don't forget you get one chance to make a first impression. Use it wisely. When I was on the job, in my last posting was a patrol location, so I would drive around and look for violators. And if I could find three things wrong with you at 60 miles an hour, then I would pull you over and see what you did for a pre-trip inspection. And if you can't tell me what you did for pre-trip inspection and just rattle it off, then being the nice guy that I was, I'd put on my coveralls and I'd do one for you. And just to throw this out, when I stopped somebody, I never wrote the ticket. In 23 years, I never wrote a ticket for the reason I stopped you. There was always something else, and it was usually bigger and better than when I stopped you. So our goal should be to go up and down the highway and just not be stopped. Let's not give law enforcement a reason to stop us. You know, just make sure that your equipment is roadworthy. You know, stay on top of your maintenance. Like I say, you don't have to drive a show truck because there's a lot of older iron out here that's, looking, pretty, in really good mechanical shape. Just, just look after your stuff and pre-trip.
So, going back, just backing up for just a second, just wanted to make sure. So the older trucks, 99 and older, they are fully exempt.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
And it's going to be interesting to see how long that exemption kicks in. Because realistically, and it won't take long before somebody comes up with something that's compatible with that, with the older technology, but the FMCSA has kind of taken taken a look at it and said, well, anything older than that's not going to be around the road, be on the road that much longer. So it'll be interesting to see how they, how they find with the older engines, how many trucks are out there and how many are exempt. And with a stroke of a pen, they can make you unexempt and you have to comply. So I'd be careful with that if I was hanging my hat on that and running amok. Because if you, paper log, you're certainly going to be under a lot more scrutiny. And I can tell you, I was not the smartest guy that ever put on a uniform. And I retired undefeated in hours of service violations. I I have yet to lose a trial in hours of service, and I was declared an expert witness for court testimony in hours of service. So with today's technology, it's just not that hard to find you. Anybody that follows Jackie warmly on Facebook, she posts when her truck goes by a certain spot in Wyoming because she always looks on that highway cam. And it's just way too easy to find you. So don't be taking the paper log exemption as a license to tell stories, because it's just going to bite you in the butt.
Okay, well, we look like we got someone that's got their hand raised real quick. Let's go and grab them. Mick, you're up and on board with Rico and Dale. How can we help?
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Great, thanks.
Well,
good. Yourself. Hey, couple things. I'm running the big road Bluetooth on a tablet, and I've got the dash link enabled now. Been running that for about 2 weeks. But I believe Dave Nemo's show in the morning, he's talking about is the requirement that the tablet has to be mounted to the dash? Because, you know, paper logs don't have to do that. Is that new? And then also, do we have to have the stickers on the truck?
Good questions. I reread the regulation last week, and that's 3.5 hours out of my life I'll never see again. And my eyes started to bleed. I can't find anywhere in the regulation that states that you have to have the stickers, nor that it has to be hard mounted. The only caveat to that is, however, in Canada, you are required to have the stickers that say you're running an electronic log. So if you're doing anything cross-border, Canadians want to know if you're on an e-log, because we're always 2 years late, 2 years late to the party. Canada's not jumping on the e-log train until 2020.
Okay.
And I'm running
Keep
Tracking, and I'm just running it on my cell phone, and I've just got a mount, a magnetic mount that sticks it to the dash, but I couldn't find anywhere in the regulation that says it has to be hard mounted to somewhere in the truck.
Okay, great. That's all I had.
All right, Mick, we appreciate it. Put you back on hold. And so what are some other little things that people need to be made aware of when it comes to ELDs? Dale, what would you not really in the business of giving recommendations as far as one particular one over the other one, but for someone that's a one truck trolley or whatever, you don't have to go out here and spend $15,000 to be able to become compliant. There are a lot of lower entry level solutions that are out there that are available. Mick was just talking about he was running Big Road. I used to run Big Road, and this was before they came out with the Dash Link. I was running Big Road a couple of years back. I've since switched over to a product from Rand McNally. They have the TND 760 that they sell in the truck stops. But just kind of, if you could maybe just tell the folks, you know, some different solutions that are out there that they don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars to be able to get their operations compliant.
Oh, sure. You know, their Big Road's a great product. I tested that. Keep Trucking is a great product, and we're just we've got 16 trucks, and that's the solution we chose. And, you know, for $30 a month, you get per unit, per truck, you get IFTA reporting, your ECM link, you know, you're fully compliant with all the rules, and it's a great product. You know, there's just so many of them out there. The only thing you have to be careful of is just go onto the FMCSA's website, and they will list who's registered and who isn't. But you know, for $20-$30 a month, you can be fully compliant and not a huge expense, and that AFTER report just saves you a pile of aggravation and is well worth it just on its own. There's a product if you're not comfortable handing the officer your tablet or your cell phone, and I've heard that a lot. I'm here to tell you that when I'm doing a roadside inspection, and if you handed me your phone, and I would probably look at the at your duty status and flip back while I'm standing there. And my experience has been when I hand the officer my phone, he'll flip through it, hand it right back to me, and then go back to the car and do whatever he has to do. I don't think the officer is going to update your Facebook status for you or check to see how long you've been logged into Pornhub or, pay your Visa bill or pay his Visa bill. All great stories, but, yeah, I don't think they're going to be interested in that. I've only had one officer that when I asked him, you know, do you want to look at it here on my phone? Do you want me to email it to you? What do you want to do? And I've only had one that's asked me to email it to him. The rest of them have been more than happy to just stand there and look at the information on the phone because, you know, they don't want the exposure of, taking your phone back to the car and something happens. You know, they don't want that aggravation. And,
it's funny you say that, Dale, because there was a story floating around. I forgot where it was reported from, but they were saying how they were using your social media also to put you out of service in some cases. Do you know anything about that? Can you expound on that a little bit
Absolutely.
More and maybe give a word to a hint to the wise out there that maybe of our listeners that are listening in about their
sure.
social media activity, certain things that they maybe don't want to be posting?
Well, absolutely, you know, and I'm a mediocre good Catholic guy, and number 11, if you're counting, is thou shalt not lie to the police, and number 12 is thou shalt not post anything stupid on social media. And yes, you do have the right to remain stupid, but please don't. I can tell you if I was in law enforcement, I would be a member of every anti-ELD group on the planet. And I don't think your roadside inspections would be that random. And there was a case in Washington State where one of our gifted drivers was posting stupid comments on Facebook. And the FMCSA's declared him as an imminent hazard and shut him down over a picture of a hose clamp and something on his throttle pedal. So anything stupid you put out there is there forever. The ELD protests, if anybody's following them, there's a picture of a girl, of a lady, and I'll use that term loosely, standing beside a truck where they've spray painted, no ELD and anti-ELD and whatever. And she's standing there flipping the camera, the bird, both fingers. That's a picture that is all over the internet and has made her famous. And that'll stay there forever. So be very, very, very careful what you post on social media. And just because you go in, post it, and then realize, oh, geez, I'm an idiot, and go back in there and delete it, it's there, and it's out there, and chances are it will come back to bite you in the butt. So, yeah, limit your access on Facebook, and if you're going to post things, stop and think before you hit post. Is this something that I'm going to be proud of tomorrow? So, yeah, be real careful about that. And, yeah, if you think that law enforcement doesn't look at these things, and the FMCSA certainly does, because I think that's what spurred their investigation into this carrier. And yeah, they've shut a guy down, and from the sounds of things, it was it was a good call on their part, but yeah, be careful what you post.
It's amazing, and just trying to stay along those lines, because I've seen different things in different groups that I've just, you know, I just shake my head. I'm like, why in the world would you put that on Facebook? But can you tell us maybe, I don't know if they're getting bad information, but okay, I'll run down a list real quick. Alcohol in a commercial vehicle.
Absolutely not. You cannot have alcohol in a commercial vehicle.
You're on your 10-hour break. You want to have your cold when you're going back there to relax. When they ask me the question, from what I understand, alcohol stays in your system. You may not be legally drunk, but alcohol will stay in your system for at least 24 hours. And if anything
Absolutely.
Does
yep.
happen, you have to go. Have a urine sample pulled, or even a blood test done. You're gonna have some explaining to do. So it's not worth the risk if you're at work.
Absolutely, and the legal limit for alcohol in a commercial driver's system, you know, varies, but. You know, some states it's down to 0.03 as opposed to 0.08 for the general public. So I can tell you from DUI check stops that I've participated in, it doesn't take much to get you at a 0.3. And you hit the nail on the head. You know, you go in and you have a drink or two and you go back out to the truck and you go to bed. It's in your system, and God forbid something happens, yeah, you're in a world of hurt. And that just goes back
to... And
not
even your fault.
Exactly.
Not meaning somebody running to you, but as a standard
yep.
operation, whenever you're involved in some type of accident, regardless of how minute it may be, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have to go give a sample.
Exactly, and yeah, somebody walks out in front of you or commits suicide. Every fatal accident, you're going in for a test. And if the officer catches any hint of alcohol on your breath, it's you're going for a blood test, and it's just not worth the aggravation that you're going to subject yourself to.
So what happens if they just have, hey, well, you know, I got it, alcohol back there in the fridge, you know, I just got it on cool. I'm going to take my 34, but from where I understand the regulation, the alcohol is not supposed to be in the vehicle at all. Period.
No, you cannot possess alcohol in a commercial vehicle unless it is listed on a manifest and secured as cargo. So. If you feel the urge to have a drink, then you need to go find a bar and go sit down and have your one beer or do whatever. But don't be anywhere near the truck. And if you decide you're on a 34-hour restart and you want to go on a bender, then go get yourself a hotel room and don't go anywhere near the truck. Because you can stumble out of the bar and walk across the street to the truck stop and fall back into your truck drunk. You're still in care and control of a motor vehicle, is how the charge reads in most states. And, yeah, you may as well be driving down the freeway. So,
don't
be anywhere...
And just a little story that, you know, I had to educate one of my customers on. I picked up at this microbrewery. A lot of those have been popping up all around the country. You got a lot of microbrewery. And you got some really cool and eclectic folks that run those little microbreweries. And it took them a little longer to get me loaded than what was anticipated. And as a token of, hey, we're sorry that... it took us so long to load you, here's a couple of six packs for you to go with. And I had to let them know, I don't drink anyway, but I had to let them know that, hey, you know, you might not want to do that going forward, because I'm not sure if you know, if something happens to a carrier that pulls your load out of here, if you, by you giving them a couple of six packs or whatever, if that might open you up to some vicarious liability.
Oh yeah, you're signing your own death warrant because you're in for a world of hurt. And you know, right now in Canada, we're getting ready to legalize marijuana, and you know, Washington State, Oregon, Colorado's legalized it, and everybody's got the argument that, well, you know what, it's my own time, I'll do whatever I like. You know, you're in a commercial vehicle, and marijuana or not, you know, if you're a recreational drug user, hair follicle testing is coming.
Ooh.
There's a big push
to
bring that in, and you know, right now the THC stays in your system, or TCH stays in your system, you know, for a while. And a lot of people get lucky and beat the drug test. But it's more and more potent than it was back in the 70s. So
absolutely,
it is staying in your system longer. And with the hair follicle testing, it's hanging around for 3 months. So if you get high today, you know, February, you could fail a drug test. And your carrier has, you know, for the new hire, they have to do the urine test. But there's nothing stating in a company policy that they can't make you pee in the bottle and do a hair follicle test as part of their company policy. So be very careful about that. And the big carriers are lobbying the FMCSA to change that, to allow for hair follicle testing on the initial, you know, pre-hiring screening that's done. So,
right.
You know, that's
okay,
something,
well,
to,
we got somebody
that's something
else
to think of.
We got someone else with their hand raised. Let's go and grab Byron. Let's, Byron, you up and on board with Rico and Dale. How can we help?
Well, hey, Byron. I got a question. Hey, how you doing, Dale? It's good to hear you. Thanks for all your good advice out here. Appreciate it. Everything you do for us out here helps us out. I fall in that boat that I have an older truck. It's a 97. And so I don't need an ELD. But last week I was sitting at a shipper, and by the end of the day I was wishing that I had an ELD. Because me and another truck backed up to a dock at the same time, you know, within minutes of each other. And they took the same amount of time to load us both. You know, we ended up both getting loaded right around 1:30, 1:45, when it was all said and done, paperwork and everything. But I noticed he pulled out, drove over the scaled, drove over, got his trailer sealed, went in, waited for the paperwork, got the paperwork and everything, went back out to his truck. You know, and my truck's lighter than most new trucks, so I didn't even have to scale because I know where my truck's at. But I got it on and parked and got my paperwork, and he left 3 hours before I could leave. You know, I didn't get to leave until noon, and he was out of there at like 9:30. Now, I've heard people say that, well, the thing about it is once you go off duty, if you don't exceed a certain speed limit, it doesn't kick you back on driving, correct?
It's the regulation states that you have to be. It won't kick you in until 5 miles an hour.
Yeah. So if you do all that and just put around in first gear, you know, it's not going to kick you on duty.
Nope.
Right.
Nope.
Aren't they required?
No.
Yeah. Wouldn't you be required to like go to on duty? Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, he, you know, technically when you leave
you know, when you load and you pull out of the dock and you're going in to do all your paperwork, then, yeah, technically you're on duty not driving. But, yeah.
But, if they don't physically go down and hit the button on duty, it's not going to log them on duty. So then they can just come back on. And so I'm sitting there thinking, maybe I should go to ELD. You know,
yeah.
If that's what the rule is.
Yeah, and it's, and again, that's going to be another one of the unintended consequences. That should put a stop to the Flying J 500, where everybody's in high range going from the fuel island to circle the parking lot looking for a parking spot. If they want to stay in the off-duty mode, then yeah, you can't exceed 5 miles an hour.
Yeah, well, and that was my question is, aren't they required to? Because, you know, they tell me, well, it logs by the minute, so you can either save time or lose time. Sometimes you make up time because it only logs by the minute. And I'm thinking, well, if it requires logging by the minute, then the minute that they come back on duty to do their paperwork and pull out of the dock, they should be going down and logging on to on duty, which would put them in the same boat as me on a paper log.
Yep, absolutely.
Run, you know, running legal on a paper log. But I felt kind of cheated not having an ELD because I'm sitting there for 3 hours longer than him, and he's gone, and he's got, you know, he runs for one of the bigger companies, you know, and they run, you know, the ELDs and have been for a long time. And I felt like I was slighted. I'm like, okay, I'm running legal on paper, and yet on ELD, they can break the law better than I ever thought about doing it.
Oh, yeah, and it's, yeah, everybody's, you know, they're, everybody's looking to, you know, what can I do to make this work the best for me? And I've seen that at produce sheds. You know,
yeah,
guys will pull out of their parking spot, and you wonder, what the heck are you doing? And they're just crawling until they get things straight, and then they take forever to back into the door. And then, you know, we do the same drill as they pull out of the dock and ever so gingerly pull out until they can find a parking spot and then back in. And you know darn well that they've, you know, they're still logged off duty or in sleeper berth and doing the same thing they always did.
Well, I guess my question to you is, does the same 7 to 8 minute rule apply to the ELD as it applies to the paper logs?
Well, they, you know, the paper logs, they gave you, you know, if it didn't take more than 7 or 8 minutes, then, you know, you could just flag it. You didn't have to log 15. You know, the ELDs, they just assumed or made the assumption that, you know, everything records by the minute, and as soon as the truck moves, it'll start recording. So, yeah, they haven't, you know, defined anything like that. I will say that, you know, I've had to run hard a couple of times to, you know, make my own deadline, certainly not a deadline a customer's shed, but, you know, when I've wanted to get home for a specific event, and running an electronic log versus paper, you gain about 2.5 hours a week if you're really running hard and being aggressive, because instead of, you know, 15 minutes for a pre-trip, I can do a pre-trip in 6, and, you know, same thing fueling. If I wind up with a free island and boom, I can be in and fueled within 6 minutes. So it, you know, over 7 days, you will gain some time.
Yeah, and I guess if you got creative with the way that you drive around during and after being loaded or unloaded, then
sure, yeah,
being a whole lot more time.
Yep.
So
yeah, I can't argue that point.
Is that going to come up on a roadside inspection though? I mean, you as a law enforcement officer, would you be able to say, you know what, you fudged this one, or
you
are
know,
you just
going
to say
can,
the electronic log is the be all and end all? I'm not going to question it.
you know, chances are, and again, if you don't look like a wounded gazelle and everything appears to be, you know, what it is, I'm just going to glance over it. And I always said this with paper logs, you know, fill in all of the information. Don't, you know, there's nice to know information and then there's required information. But if you fill out everything, and if you're not a team driver, when in the spot where it asks for a team driver, you just put NA. If I can just glance at it and it looks like everything's filled out, and you know, I'll kind of look at it, and I've got an idea how long it takes to get from point A to point B, and you know, as long as you're being reasonable, I never made a big deal out of it. When I kind of raised my eyebrows is, you're a flat decker and you've got a load of random length cedar that's tarped on your trailer, and with a straight face, you're going to tell me you loaded and tarped that in 15 minutes? Mm-hmm. I got to call bullshit to that. So, you know, if you're reasonable, and, you know, dates and timestamps still have to line up. And, you know, if your shipper, and again, I'll go from experience, you know, I'd phone a customer up and say, geez, I've got Rico here, Rico's Trucking, pulled over, and they loaded at your facility at, he's showing 8:30 this morning. I'm investigating an incident. Can you tell me what time he was there? Well, they can't roll over fast enough on you to tell you, oh, 8:30, oh, God, no, he was backed in the door at 4:30 this morning, and at 5:45, he was long gone. Oh, thank you very much. So be careful on creativity, and if you're a one-horse operator on your own authority, you have the ability to go in and edit the log. And anybody,
right,
any carrier can edit the log. On a roadside inspection and on a tablet, it really doesn't show up that it was edited. However, in the back office copy, it shows you have to edit it. You have to give an explanation of why you edited it. And the driver has to agree to the edit and sign off on it, and that stays there for the required, you know, the record keeping of 6 months. So if you're audited, that will come back and bite you in the butt. You know, chances are you'll get away with it on a roadside inspection, but in an audit or in the event of an incident, yeah, you're just setting yourself up for a world of hurt. So I'd be careful for those guys that are, you know, doing creative editing and doing business as usual.
Well,
so
yeah,
I hope that helps.
We're going to try to squeeze in before the end of the show. Byron, we appreciate the phone call. We're going to jump over and grab Steve. Steve, you're up and on board with Rico and Dale. How can we help?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, you guys. One of the things I wanted to run over with Dale is that I ran into a situation last week down in Orlando, Florida. I get to the receiver, and receiver basically, you know, at my appointment time. Well, I was there like an hour before my appointment time, but the receiver's like, you can't be on our lot and only check in 15 minutes before time. So you're gonna have to go down to the local Walmart, which is like a mile down the road, and come back within your time, which, you know, that's okay. But I did that and come back and checked in, biked into the door, and which they had you to bike your trailer in the door and then go back to the Walmart while they unload you. And I basically told them, I said, hey, look, you know, I'm out of hours, and I'm not going to be able to do that, and I'm not going to do that. You know, I got my trailer in the door, and I'm about to, you know, I'm unhooked from the trailer, and they was like, you can't be on our lot, and I just basically told them that I'm out of hours of service. And so the little security guard, you know, he got in the uproar. I was willing to show him my hours of service on my log, but he he was like, you can't be here. And so I didn't move. And so he wound up calling the cops on me. And when the cops got there, I basically told him, I said, well, look, here's the deal. I'm here. I'm out of hours of service, and I can't move. And he want me to go down to the Walmart about a mile until they call me after they get me unloaded. But I told him, I said, I can't move according to my logs. And I basically told him that if you force me to move, that's called coercion, which is you making me leave the place when I'm out of hours of service. And so the cops looked at the security guard and said, basically told him, said, ain't nothing I can do here. My hands are tied because this is private property. And, basically told him that you have to, call a tow truck or whatever like that. So long story short, I didn't move. And they basically did call the tow truck to come and tow my truck. But by the time the tow truck was there, they had gave me a call and said that they got me unloaded and I was hooking up to my trailer. Okay, now, even with that, I still didn't leave the property. I had to park on the side of the road, which I don't like doing, but I had to park on the side of the road until my hours of service was up. And the question I have for Dale is that using that coercion, can you explain that a little bit more and what kind of fines that the FMCSA has in place for someone to make you move or make you drive when you're completely out of hours of service?
Sure. Well, and something that you can do and to get you out of the conflict and out of the out of the situation, if you're unhooked and you're going to bobtail down to that Walmart, I'd bobtail down there on personal conveyance because you're going right back. And mm-hmm. and that's completely legal. And then just go back after your 10 hours is up to get your trailer. You can have an unladen trailer and still use the personal conveyance. Law enforcement on private property, they really don't want to get into it. As far as what the FMCSA has laid for charges, I'm not aware of anything that they've published, on fines or stuff. I know they're taking it very seriously, and they will do investigations and they will do audits. They're mainly, going after carriers that are forcing drivers to do things. But, worst case scenario, you get onto a safe haven on personal conveyance and just make notes in your log that, thrown off the property, security guard Bob with Fred Security, the one that ordered me off the property, and you drove down the road for a mile, 2 miles, 5 miles to get to your nearest safe haven, and, mm-hmm. You'd be fine with that.
Okay. I was just wondering about that, because I was leased the Landstar, and I been up under my own authority now for 3 months. And when I left Landstar, I brought the Omnitrack ELD and, just hooked it up, just have the account hooked up under my trucking company name. And I'm sort of new, to this whenever you're talking about, what you can and can't do in that area. But whenever I, hollered coercion, the city cop just didn't want to get involved in it or anything like that. And I don't think that it's right. I don't think that it's right that, here it is, you bring your product at appointment time, because if you miss your appointment, they're going to turn around and tell you have to reschedule or whatever they tell you to do.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and that just makes me absolutely crazy when I show up at my appointment time and, you have no intentions of loading or unloading me until you feel like it. But you're right. I mean, God forbid I'm 20 minutes late or I got to open my wallet and beg to be unloaded at the end of the day and pay a $200 fine for that privilege. So, I hear you with that.
Yeah. But okay, I do appreciate it. I just, you know, I just want to be clear in that area, and you know, and want to know what the best way out of that. You know, it worked for me that time, but it could have went the other way in that
sure
area, in that, yeah.
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 And like
and
I say,
this,
I'd go on
a yeah, that's what I was just going to reiterate that. Use that personal conveyance stipulation, because you don't want to, especially now under your own authority, you don't want to. And I know that this is going to be probably a little bit of a hotbed topic, because you don't want to get into a situation of now as your own carrier, you lose the opportunity to be able to service a customer or something else. And that's not to say that every customer is not worthy of keeping, you know, but you
right.
don't want to, if you can avoid certain situations or whatever, you know, make a note to yourself and say, okay, all right, you know, because sometimes, you know, unfortunately, things like that have a way of sometimes, you know, it becomes a bigger pissing contest than anything else, and it becomes about, you know, when you're dealing with someone that's a minimum wage security guy, wanting to be able to throw his weight around and prove his point, then, you know, then they get a little gung-ho about that, because, by God, you stinking truck driver's going to listen to what I say. You don't have any authority anywhere else, but he's going to use that as an opportunity to maybe throw his weight around more than he probably should. So sometimes, as the old war veteran told me, that son, sometimes discretion is the better part of valor. So you got to use a little bit of discretion on those type of situations, and just, you know, and I understand completely where you're coming from with the whole situation, but you could have probably used the personal conveyance to get yourself out of a jam and avoid that pissing contest in the future.
And yeah, you know, Rico hit the nail on the head. You know, is this a hill I want to die on?
Yeah, I got you. It makes sense, and I do appreciate that. I really do.
And, you know, I'll just throw that out. If anybody else, because I know we're getting up to the end of the show, you know, wants to find me, I'm on Facebook. It's Dale Howard, and I'm out of Alberta, Canada, High River, Alberta, Canada. So hunt me down on Facebook, and I would do my best to help you out any way I can, or next week, Rico's lovely call screener can give you my phone number, and we can pass that along, or you can get a hold of me through Let's Truck, the website, and they'll get in touch with me. So anything I can do to help out, I'm here to do that.
Absolutely. Once again, Dale, we definitely appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come on and join us here on the Rates and Lanes podcast. Hopefully everyone got something good from it, and we'll see you guys. We got to give the thank yous out. We want to definitely thank Dale Howard once again for taking time out of his schedule. Thank you guys, the listeners, for taking time out of your schedule to tune in, listen in, download the podcast, tell a friend to tell a friend. We want to thank Manaya is doing our call screenings tonight, so my daughter Manaya is screening our calls tonight. We want to give her a thanks. And, of course, we would be remiss in our duties if we did not thank Kevin and Lisa Rutherford for providing us with the platform to be able to bring this show to you week in and week out. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we want you guys out there to be safe. God bless you. Good night. And we'll keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. And we'll talk to you next week. Good night, Dale. Appreciate it.